Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, we put on our angry faces and learn Kung Fu. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week, including some kind of analog Nintendo 64. And then on Thursday, we are definitively ranking the Mario designs in anticipation of Super Mario Brothers Wonder. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going great. I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
Spell check. Really loves to change definitively to definitely.
It does.
It happened to me multiple times
today.
And it's not wrong. We are definitely going to be ranking
but that's
the
not
Mario
what,
design.
That's not what you mean,
it's
though.
It's not what I mean.
You mean definitive.
Yes.
Definite isn't part of our brand.
No.
Definitive.
Part of our brand.
Part of our brand. Mark, there are a couple things that we do in Los Angeles to mark the passage of time, the turning of seasons. And for me, it is realizing that I need to get my air conditioning fixed again, even though it's October and it should be getting cold by now, but it's still like 80 degrees.
Every year, it surprises me that it's so hot. Do you know what?
And this is not a weather report.
No, we don't do that anymore.
We don't do that
anymore. Believe it or not, if you started listening to the show in the past
five years.
You may not believe that in fact we used to talk about the weather consistently.
We just checked in.
As a segment of the show. But we don't do that anymore.
No, we don't do it anymore. Do you recall that like as we were approaching the summer, it was like May or April or something, and I was like, I can tell that LA summer is here because my air conditioning is broken and I need to get it fixed. I did at that time get it fixed. But Mark, let me tell you, it's broken again. There's something seriously wrong with my car.
That is a true marking of the season.
That it is, in fact, still hot enough that I can't have broken air conditioning. Here's a way that you could help my air conditioning get fixed. Go to patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society and support us at any level you like. We have 4-bit tiers, 8-bit tiers, 16-bit tiers. If you subscribe at the 8 or 16-bit level, you get access to our once-a-month episodes of miniseries we have done, NCS Detective Club, where we explore the great detective shows of television history, and we are currently making our way through NCS Goes Broadway. We just talked about the Music Man. Should we announce what we're going to do next?
Yeah, let's do it.
We're calling it on the fly here. We are going to be discussing Little Shop of Horrors.
That's right. That will be the season finale of NCS Goes Broadway, and later this week, we'll be posting a poll where anybody in the Patreon at any level can vote to determine the next miniseries.
That's right. We've been talking up this poll. It's actually coming out this week. Very exciting time. We're going to get something new to talk about or possibly something old to talk about. I'm very excited about that.
All listeners of the show should join our Discord.
Yes, and to get an invitation to the Discord, all you gotta do is email us, NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. And we will send you the invitation. You click on the link, you're there. You're in there, you're talking about Nintendo with everybody.
And it's a great time to join because Super Mario Brothers Wonder will be out, and we can be exchanging friend codes all that kind of good stuff to get in on the multiplayer, which I feel like I finally understand.
Yeah.
Because somebody posted a link to a video in the Discord today.
Right, after you and I didn't understand it for the longest time.
Yeah.
And ultimately, still don't totally understand it. Still need to get my hands on it. Get in there, have a great time. Mark, are you ready to talk about what we've been playing this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so I think we both have, we both have to check in on things that we have we have been playing, right? So would you like to talk about Sea of Stars, or should I talk about Disney Speedstorm?
I'll talk about Sea of Stars because I beat it.
Yeah.
Or I rolled credits on it.
You have beaten it.
Yeah, I have beaten it. Oh, we just talked about this.
We just talked about this.
Yeah. I have beaten it. And I finished it. There we go. I like that better. I finished it. Mm-hmm. I rolled credits on it. There is...
You went past the one that you liked.
Well, the reason I make that distinction
yeah.
is because it's very clear, you know, at the end of the credits that there is more for you to do for the true ending.
Yeah.
And I looked up the true ending, and I'm glad I did, but I don't... There was actually a moment where I finished it, and I was like, do I want to keep going? And even, I finished it a couple of days ago, and even then, there were a few times where playing Sea of Stars had just become part of my routine in the past couple of weeks, where
yeah.
I had a few free moments, and I was like, oh, like, I was wanted to pick up my Switch and play something, but there was nothing for me, you know, I'd have to start
new
game,
exactly.
and I wasn't really interested in doing that. And so, like, Sea of Stars definitely got its hooks in me. I enjoyed Sea of Stars a lot. It's not a perfect game. I think if you don't play it, you're not like missing out on the best video game of all time. But I really enjoyed the 25 to 30 hours that I played with it. I gotta say, for me, the final boss battle in the not true ending was kind of a letdown. Like, there are some really fun boss battles in the game.
Mm-hmm.
This was not one of them. It was kind of basic.
Like,
in an annoying sort of way. Not like it still took a while because you had to whittle down its health
sure.
and, you know, there were like mechanics in it, but it wasn't very inventive. It felt very rote, which was kind of surprising, given kind of the stakes in the story and who the character is that you're fighting against. But overall, I really liked it. Glad that I played it. Glad that I finished it. I don't see myself doing the true ending, but again, I'm glad I read about it because it's a nice little closure on one part of the story.
It's a little weird that to like gate. I guess this is always a thing, right? With like post game content or like any sort of like true ending or something that you really have to work for in a video game, is you always want that balance of like, is it worth it to do it? And but also like you're not like gatekeeping the best part for people who don't want to like be obsessive.
Exactly,
about
it is such a hard line to so not on a Nintendo system, or actually would have been. Except that it got delayed until December. Arkham Knight, the Batman game that introduced the Batmobile, and so the Batmobile is a big part of it. There were the Riddler like side quests, right? And if you unlocked all of them in that game, you got some sort of cutscene at the very end. And there was no way I was getting all of them.
Yeah.
But it was a very Korok seed type thing, because I watched the cutscene that it unlocked when you got all of them, and it was I'm glad I didn't waste my time.
Yeah, you know what
I mean?
Yeah. Well, and like ultimately, like the joy of those things should be in the doing and not in the like superficial reward you get at the end of it.
Totally.
Because that way it can be fun throughout instead of like one little hit of serotonin at the end. But I'm also glad that you were able to just look it up and enjoy the true ending that way.
But truly, I liked Sea of Stars a lot. Again, it took me about 10 hours until it started clicking. But the 20 hours after that were a lot of fun.
I am worried that now we are approaching the point where I'm just not going to have played Sea of Stars because we are about to enter like the Nintendo gauntlet at the end of the year here. And I'm just like, there's not really a let up in the pace until like mid-December. And some like maybe I get back to it then. But also, I'm going to be going back and like picking up Star Wars Jedi Survivor and Spider-Man 2, like those are going to be my like Christmas time games, so like I think I'm just letting it roll off my back.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe someday, you know, you'll come back to it or
no
DLC or
I don't
something.
Think so. I don't think it'll ever happen. Because Mark, I've got a disease. The disease, Disney Speedstorm.
Really? It has its hooks in you.
It has its hooks in me. I had a friend in town this weekend, at one point we were just like looking at stuff on Switch, and he was like, what's that? And I said, oh, it's Disney Mario Kart. And he was like, okay, well, let's play. And like having another like person who was like fixated on it and us like breaking down the systems and being like, okay, how do we unlock these things without spending money? And like, how do we get better at the various things? It turned into like a whole like obsessive thing. So like it's hard because like once you do reach a point where like you are clearly just grinding to try to like keep up with it. But like the way you grind is by doing like races, and the races are fun. So it's like, okay, fine. I just have fun playing the game.
Have you unlocked multiplayer?
Yes. But the multiplayer, so the local like split screen multiplayer is not great. It runs all right. And it does the split screen, you know, like vertically. So like, you know,
Mario Kart style.
That's right. But one of the sort of just like fundamental problems with Disney Speedstorm is that the camera is too low. Like Mario Kart, the camera's nice and high. You can see like a lot of the track.
Thank you, Lakitu.
Thank you, Lakitu. There is no Lakitu in the Disney. Who's Disney's Lakitu?
They don't have one.
This should be a whole episode of our show.
Yeah, You're right. So write
like,
it down.
Like the hummingbird from Pocahontas? Yeah, write it down. We'll figure this out. So like that nice high camera in Mario Kart, when you're in split screen, you get to see a lot of the track. You can like make decisions based on what you see coming down the road. With the lower camera and split screen, you don't have enough like screen real estate to like see what's coming up ahead, and makes the game much harder. And it just takes the normal like single player UI, like the information on the top and bottom of the screen, and just cuts it in half size wise. So you like, it's like unreadable.
That's really funny.
It's really funny and a poor design. But there's also when you use character specific skills, there's like a little banner that appears across like diagonally, like a sash, like a mayoral sash of the character's face, like freaking out. And in the normal game, you know, that takes up maybe like a quarter of the screen. They don't shrink that in split screen, so it's like it completely obstructs your view as you're racing.
Okay, yeah, that sounds pretty bad.
There are a lot of ways in just like in which like the game just like is kind of broken and like not designed for split screen multiplayer. But I don't know. There's something I can't resist about like. I want to look. I discovered these like timed challenges, and there was one where it's like. You're racing as Gaston, in the, like Beauty and the Beast level. And, it's just like super fun. And I want to unlock Gaston, 'cause like he's Gaston, he's great. He's like, be prepared to lose to me. And it's super fun. And I just like, it's so dumb that I'm like, yeah, I want Captain Gantu, you know, I want Figment. I want all these dumb characters, and it's just fun.
And based on your report from last week about like the club remixes of Disney songs, I'm just imagining,
yeah,
like Be Our Guest from Beauty and the Beast with like a thumping bass.
Yeah, I mean, what's there definitely is a like a hierarchy. Some of the club remixes are better than others. They're not all created equal, right? Like the Mickey Mouse Club song, good. You Got a Friend in Me, bad. Be Our Guest, pretty good.
I'm just imagining the Hunchback of Notre Dame level, and it's like Hellfire, the yeah, song yeah, that yeah. Where Frodo's talking about being tempted by Esmeralda.
Yeah, I don't, there are no Hunchback characters yet, but yeah, I mean, they update these, I think, each they're not chapters, but like each like story thing lasts for about 2 months. So there's still like 40 something days on the Aladdin thing, which it unlocks a new chapter like every week. So, you know, we're making our way through that. We're on like chapter 6 or something like that, 5 or 6 of 10. But like that's also like a neat little time release thing where like you can play up to the point where like you've caught up with it. And then you're like, okay, well now I just have to like chill out and I'll check in next week. Which, like, that's kind of, if someone could pace out Mario Kart for me, like, that might be better.
Mm-hmm.
Also discovered that in the multiplayer, the free play mode, you can race as any of the characters, whether you've unlocked them or not. So Figment, playable.
There we go.
In that way. And then it also, like, kind of lays bare the, like you select which movie you're racing in, and then there are like several different paths through that track. So like, and it's something that was like sort of evident as you were playing, but like the Pirates of the Caribbean level, you're like, oh, there are like 4 or 5 different ways through it. So it's like technically a different track every time, or not every time, but 5 different times, but with like a singular theme. Which is interesting, but it ultimately makes them feel less unique, right? Because they like categorically are. You know, just thinking about like, it's exciting when you hit Rainbow Road in Mario Kart, or like there are different levels that like have such strong visual identities and such strong sonic identities that you can immediately tie them to how the track works. And that same kind of thing doesn't work for this game.
It's an interesting idea to have one track or one world, I guess, with so many different track layouts in it. But I could see how it wouldn't necessarily pay off.
Well, and especially when it's like, it's Disney, right? So they've got all of these cool environments that you could be racing in. And instead you're like, okay, well, this is like the fifth time we've been in like the Jungle Book land. And they've been five different tracks, but like, who cares?
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, I don't know. I cannot tell if the game is good or bad, but I'm enjoying the heck out of it. And then, Mark, I went to Barcade in Highland Park. The name of the place is Barcade. I said, before, that's just my normal, I don't know, like speech thing. I didn't mean the indefinite article. Have you been to Barcade?
No, I haven't.
It's a cool barcade in Highland Park. They have a bunch of classic video games there. I played Tapper. The like beer pouring game. They've got one with like the Budweiser branding and the controller where it's like a joystick and then the button instead of like the button for pour. It's like a beer
tab.
That's fun. So that was super fun. Played Donkey Kong and did really badly. I know I'm better at Donkey Kong than that, but I did not clear the first level of Donkey Kong. I know I can do that, Mark. But I did not on Sunday. And then I played Alien 3 The Gun.
That's such a funny subtitle to me. Is it told from The Gun's point of view?
I don't. So it's two player, so it should be The Guns. But it's bizarre because it comes out in 1993, same year as Alien 3, but has like, outside of a few like specifics of like names and stuff, nothing to do with the Alien 3 that came out. And I know that movie was in, like, you know, a development nightmare forever. But, like, there are notably no guns in Alien 3. That was one of Sigourney Weaver's things. That she was like, I'd like there to be no guns in this movie.
That's so funny.
David Fincher was like, all right, cool, let's do it.
Yeah, but the video games were like, we gotta have guns
we
in
gotta,
this.
Look,
it's gotta be in the title.
It's gotta be The Gun.
We need people to understand that, yes, this is based on Alien 3.
But also,
it has
the
guns
gun.
In it.
Right. Should be The Gun : Alien 3. And that was fun. And then my friend from out of town and Sarah and I played the X-Men arcade game. They've got one of those dual monitor six player cabinets. And I didn't realize this, that the dual monitor cabinet achieves that illusion with one monitor that's being reflected and the other monitor right next to it, because you can't actually put two CRT screens next to each other without there being like this big ugly seam between them. But so it's a CRT next to a mirror, and then a reverse image TV is like under it, and that's being reflected back by the mirror. So it's really cool illusion. Yeah. And like, that's how, like some old punch out machines are like achieve what they do. But which is like a single, reflection. But yeah, I didn't realize that's how that cabinet worked. And it was exciting to get to play one for a while. I played as Storm naturally. Sarah played as a Nightcrawler and Taylor was Wolverine. So
good crew.
No one repped Cyclops. With his optic blasts, which are not hot. All right, Mark, let's get into the new releases.
Today, Tuesday, October 17th, Sonic Superstars is released.
Sonic Superstars. Now, you and I were fans of Sonic Mania.
Yeah, I really loved Sonic Mania.
Some would say that we even got like a little Sonic Mania, right? Like
Some would say.
You don't really want to support me in this one, do you?
I'm agreeing. Some people would say that.
That's a strong yes, but not a yes and. Yeah, but this is like the same engine, even if the graphical style is totally different. Are you going to be tricked
I am.
By Sonic?
It's bad.
You are.
I am. I really liked Sonic Mania. It's bad timing, though.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm going to buy it right now. Maybe I'll wait for it to go on sale. But, I mean, Sonic Mania was the first Sonic game I had really played before, and I did end up really loving it. So the fact that this is in the same engine, that is interesting to me.
Let me ask you this. And do you know the answer to this question? What does Sonic Superstars cost?
Oh, I don't know the answer. I'm going to guess that it's $50.
Oh boy, it looks like it is a $60 game.
This is a good one to go on sale.
We're going to wait for this one to go on sale, I think. Because Mania was like $19, right?
Right.
Maybe 24.
It was also remixes of older levels, though. Not to denigrate the work.
It's a good game.
Yeah, it's a great game. Also, today, A Boy and His Blob Retro Collection released digitally.
Which includes, of course, the rescue of Princess Blobette and return to Blobalonia or whatever.
Yep. And then on Thursday, October 19th, Gargoyles Remastered is released digitally.
I want to talk about Gargoyles Remastered for a second, just because I feel like I'm living in an alternate universe where there was a Gargoyles Super NES game and people liked it. I don't remember there being a Gargoyles Super NES game.
I don't remember either. Gargoyles isn't really a franchise that I ever clocked growing up. I remember it being
me neither.
On, and I hear that it's good,
right?
But I never really got into it.
It's got a lot of like Star Trek Next Generation cast members voicing characters.
Okay. I was just looking up. So it's the. Is it just the Super Nintendo game, or are there other?
So.
Okay, got it.
I mean, I don't know.
Do you remember who developed it originally? I was wondering if it was like a Capcom thing, because you know they were making.
Sure.
They made a Chip and Dale game, Rescue Rangers for the
and right
DuckTales
and DuckTales
the,
right and Tailspin and the other one. What was the other one?
Gummy Bears.
Was it Gummy Bears?
Oh, no. Like the video game. I don't
know. Yeah.
I don't know what the fourth video game would be. Was it Gargoyles Remastered?
I don't think so. I'm thinking of the Disney Afternoon Collection, which has a Tailspin game, two Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers games, Darkwing Duck is the other one.
Oh, okay.
These could also be either like Interplay or like Virgin Interactive from like the... Lion King and Aladdin games on the Super NES, but you know maybe there's something else. I don't have any memory of this game.
Yeah, me either. And then of course on Friday,
of course
it's Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Mark, are you excited for Super Mario Brothers?
I am. I'm really looking forward to this. I was glad I kind of like cleared mm-hmm. the deck a little bit, getting Sea of Stars finished. And I'm really excited for this. I kind of can't believe it's here.
I know it is upon us. And like the game has leaked, so people are playing it and streaming it and stuff already. Which is just like, I don't know. It's so funny and weird to see people being like 100% Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and it's like, what? What are you doing? But yeah, I'm also very much looking forward to like putting some real time into it this weekend. I'm giving myself a artificial deadline on a project I'm working on of this Friday, so I can be done with that and just commit myself this weekend to Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Also, like you said, it really does begin the gauntlet
yes.
of Nintendo releases, which I didn't really think about.
We got it. Look, we all need to get on the same page right now, because Super Mario Brothers Wonder comes out on Friday. 2 weeks later, WarioWare Move It comes out, and then 2 weeks after that, Super Mario RPG comes out.
Wow.
So this is the gauntlet. Between the end of October and like late to mid November, there's a new first party Nintendo game every 2 weeks.
I feel like Move It is in a really good position.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm gonna play it. I love WarioWare games.
Yes.
But it's also not one that you have to mainline. It's one that you can dabble with,
you
can play with friends. It won't really get in the way, I feel like, of Wonder or even Super Mario RPG.
Yeah, well, and I mean, maybe the gauntlet actually started last week with Detective Pikachu, right?
Yeah, but we don't care about that.
We don't care about that. Boy, what a great point. Also, just as a public service announcement to anyone using their Nintendo Switch Online vouchers to purchase any of these games coming up in the gauntlet, maybe would advise against using it for WarioWare, because that game retails for $50. So you don't really get, like, if you're bundling it, if you're getting it and Super Mario Brothers Wonder, you are saving $10, but you could be saving 20, mm-hmm. right? So that's just a thing to note. Ditto Detective Pikachu, which was only $50. And also, I was not clocking into this earlier, but Mario versus Donkey Kong, when it comes out in February, is also a $50 game. Nintendo just exploring that price scale, you know?
Yeah, interesting.
All right, let's close out the new releases. Which brings us to a regular segment on our show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, wherein a performer or a group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance, 433, Mark and I will talk about something not at all Nintendo related, thus fulfilling the contract of the piece. Mark, we have pulled yet another Halloween quiz from BuzzFeed. This time we are going to be determining whether we can survive a monster movie.
Yes, survive a horror movie.
Survive, yes. We know if you'd survive a horror film based on your answers to these questions. So question number one, what scares you the most?
And these are collective, right? Like NCS answers. Would NCS collectively be able to survive a horror movie?
That's right. So what scares us the most? Clowns, holes, and it's like a termite mound close up on the holes. Needles, confined spaces.
Ooh, for me, I think it'd be confined spaces. How are you feeling?
We can go with confined spaces. They have like a scary picture of a clown, but like I think that's different. Like a regular clown, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel the same.
What's your zodiac sign? What is your zodiac sign?
I think I'm a Sagittarius.
Okay, so either we have to either pick Sagittarius, Leo, or Aries, because there's only four options here.
Uh-huh.
Or Capricorn, Virgo, or Taurus, because I'm a Virgo.
Well, the show started in
like
September-ish, right?
Sure.
So what is that?
I don't care.
I'm looking it up.
All right.
September. It was. Oh no. Maybe it was October. Virgos and Libras, so whatever that one is.
So Libra is a different one. Aquarius, Libra, or Gemini.
Okay, I'm looking up October. Maybe that'll help. Libra or Scorpio.
Okay, let's go with Scorpio.
Okay, cool.
Scorpio, Cancer, or Pisces is the thing.
Okay,
pick a weapon. Knife, gun, hammer, anything that can be thrown.
I think throwing. I want distance.
I want distance too, and I don't want a gun. when something scares you, how do you react? Scream, fight, run, drop into a ball. And there's like an image of a person like really like curled up.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like in an alley, and they've got like their feet up on the other wall. It's a bizarre picture.
What's your instinct here?
Run.
Okay, let's go with it.
I think run. I think I'm getting out of there. What kind of monster would you rather face? Ghost, demon, werewolf, or vampire?
I would rather...
I gotta just walk you through the pictures
here. Okay, yeah,
because
please.
The ghost is clearly the, like, edited image of the cover of Human Centipede. Demon is, like, a big guy with horns.
Uh-huh.
Werewolf, just a wolf. Vampire, just a bat.
I think I, out of all of those, a werewolf for sure. Because they're not...
It's one night a month.
It's one night a month, and, you know, like...
You just silver them away.
They're not undead.
Right.
You can kill them.
Right. With silver. Pretty easy to kill them with silver. Okay, werewolf it is. I was going to say vampire, because it might be fun to hang out with one. Wait, was that the last question? That was the last question.
Okay.
Oh, we did not survive.
What?
I wonder
if it was our run instinct.
It says, sorry, the killer was a lot smarter than you. Good news is that you died a hero. JK, you died running away, tripped, and tragically broke your ankle in two places.
That was the one that did us in, I think.
And that was my instinct. So I'm afraid that I did us in.
We just have to be true to ourselves.
Yeah.
These are the results.
We have no other choice. There's way more time left in this 433, so I'm just going to skip ahead. There we go. All right. we did it. In that we did not survive. Mark, we were accompanied today by pianist William Marks. All right. Let's get into the news.
The company Analog has announced the Analog 3D, a, quote, reimagining of the Nintendo 64 that promises 4K output, original display modes, reference quality recreations of specific model CRTs and PVMs. I don't even know what a PVM is.
Something monitor.
And 100% game compatibility for every region.
So this is Analog doing what Analog does. We have talked about a lot of their products, the NT, the Super NT, the Pocket. I own two of those, and they are reliable, good pieces of hardware for playing games directly off cartridges without emulation.
And I love all, like, the idea of all of these. I don't own any cartridges, you know? So
yeah,
like,
of any kind.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
game packs.
Game packs. That's right. I don't, and actually my parents might have some Nintendo 64 game packs. So yeah, we might, but I don't have any like Game Boy ones or like Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of this.
I love the idea of this too. I do. So, you know, one of the things that is easy to dunk on for Analog is that they run a sort of like scarcity thing, just in that their products are very popular, especially the Analog Pocket. I was on a wait list for over a year, or I guess it was just about a year from when I placed the order for my Analog Pocket to actually getting it. And then they've been putting up a lot of like special releases. They did a glow in the dark one, some transparent colors, and those all sold out like right away. And I wonder if we were talking about this a little bit in the Discord today. And do you think the market is there for this Analog 6 or Analog 3D in the same way that it was there for the Analog Pocket? Like, the Pocket just seems like such an interesting and specific, like, form factor that people want, like, a new classy way to play Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games. I don't know that that same market exists for Nintendo 64.
Do you know what I always think of with the Nintendo 64 and kind of, like, gauging its popularity? Is the story you once told about buying one,
yes,
I want to say from a secondhand shop in Chicago, Chicago, and you were walking down the street. And
stopped
everybody
multiple times.
By people being like, whoa, that's like a Nintendo 64. Like,
yeah.
I think for...
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I think for people that are maybe, I'll say 10 years younger than we are, that they have a nostalgia for the Nintendo 64,
that's
probably in a way that we do for the Super Nintendo,
yeah,
or the Game Boy. And so, yes, I definitely think that there is a market for it. And also the way that they run their system is on pre-orders, right? And
yeah,
so they, and I think that's part of why they do like limited runs is even though the demand is there.
Right.
So they could.
Right. But it's like make to order, right? Like they make a bunch, but they know they're not making as many as they are going to have pre-ordered. And then they just like make them to order from there.
Exactly. But no, I think this is really cool, especially because, I think you were pointed out on the Discord, the emulation of Nintendo 64 is notoriously tricky.
Yes, and Nintendo themselves haven't figured it out.
But if you, like, the thing with the analog systems is that they're not emulating, right? They
right.
have recreated the hardware, and so using modern components. And so if it, what they're saying is pretty incredible, 100% game compatibility for every region,
mm-hmm,
would be huge for the Nintendo 64.
So we haven't actually seen what this thing looks like. Do we think it has four controller ports on the front of it?
And
kind of has to, right?
Well, so remind me, for the Super NT, did those plug in or were they Bluetooth?
So the it didn't come with any controllers. It has actual Super NES controller ports on the front of it.
Okay.
So you need Super NES controllers, or you know, you can get like a Bluetooth one from like 8-Bit Do or whatever. But yeah, so like the controller, because the relationship between the Nintendo 64 and its controller also like hyper specific, right? And I think that they're also releasing a controller that looks a little bit more like a like Switch Pro controller, but it has, you know, like six face buttons, you know, including the sort of D-pad. Only one, or the C buttons, and only one analog stick. But like, I think that's going to be necessary, right? Because like, the further we get away from 1996 and the launch of the Nintendo 64, the more broken those analog sticks become on everyone's controllers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. But I do assume it'll have four, because that's such an important part of the Nintendo 64. Yeah.
Yeah, all very interesting. I wonder if the controller that they release for it will have native Rumble, if it can use a Rumble pack. All of that stuff, I think, still we're in early days here on this thing.
That's right. It's releasing sometime in 2024. No word about when pre-orders begin or anything like that. Again, I
more
love
pricing
the,
or anything
right.
like that.
I love the idea of all of these, but I would never buy them. Beak.
Sorry.
I love the idea of all of these, but I would never buy them because I don't own the cartridges.
Right. I went to Game Realms in Burbank this weekend. Have you been to Game Realms?
I have not recently.
It is a not recently, but you have been in the past.
Yes.
have you now or have you ever been a shopper at Game Realms?
I plead the fifth.
It's a used game shop in Burbank, and they have a pretty robust Nintendo 64 game selection. So I was like looking at game carts earlier this weekend. But I currently also don't own any of them.
But again, I wonder what I could wrestle up from my parents' house.
They might have something.
I feel like they still
have
like a basket full of Nintendo 64 games. The other thing that this makes me think of is, because I know we have a lot of these, does the GameCube come next?
Wow. Well, okay.
Like, at what point does it stop being necessary?
Right. I mean, but the GameCube, like, is necessary. There is no way to play GameCube
and GameCube
games on
and
any
4K
modern
output.
Hardware. Yeah.
You know, like, because I know that I have a lot of GameCube games and working GameCube controllers.
Yeah. I wonder if they, at that point, just do, like, GameCube and Wii, right? Because, like, the guts of it are basically the same.
Yeah.
Just have to, like, determine.
Tape two together.
Yeah, just tape two GameCubes together, and you
get
a Wii.
Yeah.
Actually, what you can do is you can disconnect one of the handles and, like, loop it through the other handle and then reconnect it, and then they're connected that way. But, yeah, it's there's no way to play GameCube games in through HDMI.
Yeah, and there's no way to play GameCube games on Nintendo Switch Online. Right? You know what I mean? Like, GameCube really is, right now, the lost generation. Occasionally, you get a Pikmin 1 plus 2, you get a
Metroid Prime.
Yeah, but none of those are, like, the original games.
Right.
There's no real way to play the GameCube library.
Right.
It's kind of bonkers.
Just like the DS and 3DS. I mean, 3DS is still, we're still, like, in the era of 3DS, but not really.
You know what? I would buy it a analog DS. And
sure.
I would buy carts in order, or game
you would have to.
Or whatever. I would have to. I don't own any, but I would 100% do that. Same with, I would buy a GameCube one, too.
Yeah.
Because I do have the stuff for that.
And the Virtual Boy, of course.
Of course. Yeah, there we go.
When are they going to do that?
The problem with that is that nobody has the game carts to play.
That's a fine point. But at that point, you just emulate, right? Yeah. Like, these things are emulation friendly. Like, they're pretty easy to get emulating games running on them. I actually thought when I saw the analog 3D that I was like, no way. And then I clicked on it and was like, oh, yeah, actually, no way. Why would they do that? It does. It's interesting to me how, you know, that the Pocket is such a big deal right now. And it runs the entire Game Boy library, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and then there are all these like different things that you can plug into it to play, like you know, Game Gear or the TurboGrafx one, and like all these other the WonderSwan, all these different portable systems. That just seems like the library for it is endless, but the library for the Nintendo 64 specific ends pretty early.
Yep. But it's a system that people love.
Also, I kept calling for the Virtual Boy. It's got a much, much smaller library, including a game we can't talk about.
That's right. Blank Funky Bowling.
Yeah, we can just call it Funky Bowling, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. With only a few days from the release of Super Mario Brothers Wonder, there's still some new bits of information that are popping up. Like, after a day last week of incorrect speculation based on the credits in the in-store demo for Super Mario Brothers Wonder, voice actor Kevin Afghani has been revealed as the new voice for Mario and Luigi in the game. He posted on X, quote, "Incredibly proud to have voiced Mario and Luigi in Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Thanks to Nintendo for inviting me into the Flower Kingdom."
So, this is his debut outing. We not currently in the legend status that Charles Martinet was. Will he get there, Mark?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You do,
For a whole generation of Mario fans, I think he for sure will be.
Do we think he's coming back?
Who knows, but, like, why wouldn't he?
Because he says, thanks to Nintendo for inviting me into the Flower Kingdom. Sounds like maybe he's just doing this game.
I don't know.
Mark doesn't buy it.
I mean, I don't think we should read the flower leaves too closely here.
Right.
You know, try to like, yeah, the petals. There we go. There we go.
Flower leaves.
There's a word for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should like try to, we don't need to like, this isn't the Bible or anything. We don't need to like parse it for meaning.
Right. And also, we should let the priest do that for us. I do think it's interesting that there was all of this like fervor around like trying to deduce who the Mario voice actor was. I don't feel any specific drive to like know the name of this person.
I don't know. I don't care. Yeah,
like it'll come to us in time.
Exactly. I feel the same way.
Yep. Okay, great.
Mario series producer Takashi Tezuka has been making the rounds, doing interviews in the lead up to the game. And in an interview with NPR, he spoke specifically about the new art style in Wonder, saying, quote, "Traditionally, our development costs have gone into the gameplay experience itself. Of course, that's absolutely essential, but this time we really wanted to pour some of that into the animations." He continues, "People who are coming from the Mario movie are going to see that, meaning the art style, and think, quote, this is what Mario does, this is how Mario moves, and we wanted them to experience something similar to that."
Okay. So the thinking here is that the motion and visual identity of Super Mario Bros. Wonder is more in line with the movie,
which I believe. Like, I think it's interesting that clearly they weren't like, let's make this look like the movie.
Yeah,
but they, because the two don't look alike, but that they did spend take special care, and it totally shows, right? Like everything in the game is so much more expressive,
totally,
than they have been in the past. And I think that's an interesting consideration that you just had a $1 billion grossing movie.
Totally.
You know, a lot of people interacting with Mario for the first time or for the first time in a long time. And I think it makes sense that the game that would follow, even if it is not copying the art style from the movie, but they know or want, understand that people like would expect a certain level of expressiveness.
Yeah, what's interesting is like that's a fine thing to grab from the movie, right? A movie that we didn't particularly like, or I'll just speak for
we hated.
But like that is a good lesson to draw from the movie, is like the characters should be expressive, right? They should have personality. But like when I see the art style, it reads as more like graphic design-y to me, right? Like the way that the perspective on Mario is kind of cheated, so we're never actually like seeing him in profile. We get a lot of his face. Feels more like what they were trying to achieve with 16-bit graphics in Super Mario World, now just, you know, rendered more in more detail, but still with that sort of like cheated perspective so you can see more face.
Yeah, I think it's a very video game take on the things that they want to draw from the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like the best of both worlds.
But also, like, just to, like, hang on that graphic design thing for, like, a second, or even kind of, like, comic bookness, there are, like, words that appear in, like, little, like, sound effect balloons a la, like, Batman from the 60s, right? So, like, yeah, it's they're doing so much in the game that is not cinematic, visually speaking.
Right.
And is almost more, like, indebted to, like, manga or comics or whatever. So yeah, it's I love seeing this stuff develop.
Also, in an article in Game Informer about the legacy of the new Super Mario Brothers series, Tezuka commented on whether Wonder is the start of like a brand new line of games, saying, quote, "I believe that we have transitioned from the new Super Mario Brothers series into a new phase, but at this point we have no idea what the next game style will be." And then the game's art director Masanobu Sato added, "However, what we do know is that Super Mario Bros. Wonder has set a bigger stage for adventure for Mario and friends."
A bigger stage for adventure. Is he saying anything there?
Classic Nintendo, yep. You know, like...
Word salad.
Word salad.
Because, like, I don't expect that the next Mario Party, for example, is going to look like Wonder, right?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but I agree. Yeah.
That, like, it's probably going to slouch back into the sort of, like, modified new Super Mario Brothers art style.
Yeah. But who knows what the... like 2D series would look like going forward.
Yeah, and if we get like another 3D game at some point.
Right.
Because we must at some point. But yep. And it's been 5 years since, 6 years since Odyssey that like we're due over there. So yeah, I don't, there's a lot we don't know about the future.
yep. But here's something we do know about art style.
Yep.
The box art for Princess Peach Showtime has been ever so subtly updated.
Ever so subtly.
Changing the expression on Peach's face on the main image, as well as the image of her in her kung fu transformation. And in her kung fu transformation, instead of just kind of being like the blank Peach expression that is like what she is.
Peach standard, yeah.
Yeah, 90% of the time. Here she's actually like... You know, looking like she's engaging in kung fu.
Yeah, well, and a lot like that she's exerting herself, right? Uh-huh. And a lot of it is just in the eyebrow. She's got like one kind of angry eyebrow. And in the main image, they kind of like close her mouth and give her like a little bit more of like a smirk, which I think all works.
Like, all for the better.
All
like,
for the better.
When you see the difference, you're like, oh yeah, why does she look like that all the time?
It's a little strange and I don't like it. But yeah, it seems like an improvement for the better. I know that there was some like speculation of like, is this just how they're changing the American box art? No. Turns out that it is across all territories.
That'd be a very Kirby thing to do, right?
Right. They love to give Kirby angry eyebrows, which I think is cute. So let's keep it up. Make Kirby angry.
Kirby throwing a fit.
Yeah, I like that. But yeah, no, I think this is a marked improvement. Some of the outlets that I was reading reporting this were saying that she looks more like the Peach from the movie, which I know we were just talking about in terms of like the Mario characters, all the Mario characters looking more like they did in the movie. I kind of don't see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, that's the thing. What we were just talking about is they didn't try to make the characters in Wonder look more like the movie. They just took some of the, you know, like ideas of expressiveness.
Isn't that funny?
And did that. So
that like people are looking at it and be like, I don't know, these characters are showing emotion. What are they, from the movie?
So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's related to the movie at all or trying to draw her closer to how she's presented there.
But again, I know I said it before, but like what a lesson to learn from the Super Mario Brothers movie is like, let the characters have personality. Let them smile or smirk or emote in any way.
Well, especially if Peach is going to carry her own series.
Totally.
And, like, have her own game. Like, she does have to have... I mean, look, I know Mario is not... does not display a huge array of emotions.
He displays the most important emotion, love of running.
Yeah, wahoo.
That's right.
Pokemon Go is adding 4-player co-op party play in a major update starting today. From the press release, party play lets 4 total trainers, level 15 and above, adventure as a party together. And we don't talk about Pokemon Go that often on the show, but this feels like, when I read this, I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this makes sense. Pokemon Go with friends is a great idea. So you can engage party challenges, which is when you're working together, when you form a party, you get like a pop-up asking which challenge you want to take on, and they can be focused on spinning Pokestops, battling in raids, catching Pokemon and others, and completing party challenges gets you in-game rewards.
So this feels a little bit like the working on challenges together in Pikmin Bloom.
Totally, another Niantic joint.
That we've been playing a lot together and like teaming up. Do we have a...
No, I was actually just thinking that.
We need to get a team challenge going for this week.
Today's steps wasted.
That's true. Today's flowers wasted as well. And Pikmin Bloom recently added a thing where you can invite people to mushroom challenges, which is just another way of like making it more of a communal sort of thing. It's cool to see Pokemon Go also getting that kind of support.
Yeah, totally. Last Friday, Microsoft officially completed their acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Prior to the merger, Nintendo and Microsoft signed an agreement that included bringing Call of Duty to Nintendo hardware for 10 years. And so at this point, they are contractually obligated to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we see this in 2024? Do you think it's dependent on next-gen Nintendo hardware?
Ooh. I mean, if they don't bring it to Switch, but they bring it to other platforms, they're, like, in violation of this contract, right?
Well, we don't know, or at least I don't know, when the contracts, if the
That's
contract
a great point.
Stipulates
yeah.
when it starts. You know, like, if, or if in part of their negotiations, Nintendo was like, you know what, we're not releasing, don't worry about it on the Switch. Release it on the new hardware.
People are always like that with contracts, where they're like, you know, don't worry about yeah. this part. I wonder if it would be a, at least on the current generation Switch, a cloud version.
Possibly. Although, no, they, it had to be native.
Had to be native.
It had to be native. It could not be a cloud version. That was one of the stipulations. But I do wonder, I mean, you know, there's rumors that Nintendo is getting new hardware next year. Call of Duty usually comes out in the fall. So if there
That's
is
a good point.
If there is new yeah. Nintendo hardware, maybe it does come out next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, maybe they're working like hand in hand with them right now to make sure that they can run their game on the new specs.
Speaking of the next generation Switch, Game Rant spotted a patent filing from Nintendo that was filed last year but published this October. The patent shows what appears to be some new handheld gaming hardware, leading to some speculation that we're getting our first look at the Switch 2.
Caveats abound. These are all howevers. However, the thing does not appear to be using Joy-Con. No Joy-Con. There are controls on this little handheld pad. Second, however, it only has one analog stick, which is not a viable way to sell new hardware in 2023 or 2024. However, this thing only has one set of shoulder buttons, just L and R. No triggers. There are, however, home and capture buttons, like, located on the bottom of the machine. So, you know, like, you're missing some of those buttons from the front, but they're just, like, on the bottom, along with a USB port. So, what is this?
The only thing I can think of, first of all, I'll say I don't think this has anything to do with Nintendo's next generation hardware.
I agree. And also, you know, grain of salt, patent filings frequently don't mean anything.
Right. Frequently, they're just like, hey, we came up with this thing that we're not going to use, but we should patent it.
Right.
Because if it was next gen Nintendo hardware, they wouldn't, like, the patent wouldn't be revealed yet. The Switch
right.
was never leaked this way. You know,
yeah.
it doesn't happen. But what has happened is we've had regulatory filings for, oh no, those were regulatory filings. They weren't patents for like, but this is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But it's wrong. I'm saying this up front. I know
but we
it's
know
wrong.
That it's wrong, but please
but,
say
you know,
it anyway.
You know, like the Nintendo 64 controller leaked
right.
before, from like the FCC filings.
Right.
Before those were revealed, just like a few weeks before. So I got a little excited because I was like, oh, maybe this is like some weird way to play a Nintendo DS. You know, where you have, like...
It's just one screen, though.
Yeah, but, like, you use, like, the TV as your...
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, that's totally wrong. That's not a real thing, because this is not a this is not a regulatory filing. It's a
right,
patent.
It's a patent filing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but it also could still be that, right? Like, it although usually patents would say, like, then that, like, what the...
Right,
how
it connects,
to
the TV or whatever.
Yeah. But so my thought here was, could this be some other kind of handheld thing that Nintendo is working on? Like, are we finally gonna get an all-in-one encompassing Game & Watch machine?
Oh. I mean, the Game & Watch doesn't require that many buttons.
It does not. Truly, the four buttons is too many. But so, sometimes there's a D-pad on each side, you know, so, like, there are, like, different use cases. But no, I mean, ultimately, it doesn't make any sense. But, like, yeah, what else could this thing be?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's something that they don't intend to build.
I think
so that's why
right.
the
yeah.
We're seeing the patent filing for it.
Do you think there's a world where Nintendo goes back to making, like, a machine that is, like, a less powerful version of, like, their main thing to just, like, make cheaper games for it and have it be, like, targeted towards kids? Like,
do you mean like a Nintendo Entertainment System to Game Boy type thing?
Yeah. I mean, like, is there, I'm just thinking about, like, the space that Pokemon occupies in the Nintendo landscape and like some of the problems with getting Pokemon on Switch and like having it run well is that it has to run like a console game because it has that kind of output and just like everything needs to be more detailed and high definition. What if this thing is like they're like doing a make good here and being like, this is for kids. It's a $100 machine. You can buy $40 mainline Pokemon games on it and everything is less detailed. And you know what I mean? Like,
I do hear what you're saying. I do not think that that is the case at all. I think part of the reason why Nintendo was able to get their house in order was one of the final things that Satoru Iwata spearheaded in leading up to the Switch and why the Switch was so successful, because Nintendo wasn't splitting their development resources.
Right, they were just collapsing that all into one.
Also, I don't think Nintendo would ever, and I know it was just an example off the top of your head, but I don't think they would ever say, like, this is for kids.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, all of their systems are
for the family.
For, like, everybody. Yeah. I also think that it's a problem of their own making in a way, because I think that in the early days of the Switch, if they had wanted to, and this has its own pitfalls, but if they had wanted to, I think they could have continued to create like $40 experiences.
Sure.
That kind of indie games feel that niche on the Switch now.
Totally.
But I think they could have continued to do that and gotten away with it. I understand why they didn't, because they're like, hey, this is a fully capable video game system that is just as good in handheld as it is on TV. So I understand why they didn't want
to continue those experiences. Yeah.
But I think they're too far past that now to start introducing those types of games. Personally, I do feel like it's a part of their library that I miss existing.
Yeah, I do too.
But yeah.
What's interesting is like Nintendo has been exploring that scale a little bit, right? Like everybody 1-2 Switch was $30, $40.
Yeah, something
I forget.
Like that.
I already mentioned what WarioWare, but the WarioWare Get It Together was also $50. They put out a fair number of games at that lower price point. The fitness boxing games, all the Dragon Quest games that they publish, they do so at $50 instead of $60. Which,
wait, really? Was Dragon Quest 11S Echoes of the Lucid Age Definitive Edition for the Nintendo Switch
$50? Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure that was, I paid full price for that.
Well, whether you did at the time or not, if you were to buy it now, not on sale, it's $49.99.
Wow.
Same as Dragon Quest Builders and Dragon Quest Builders 2. But yeah, it's so they do explore that scale a little bit, but you know, not a lot. I would definitely love to see more just like $40 price point games. Even though I recognize that $40 now is worth, you know, less than $40 was
right when
DS and 3DS were things.
But yeah, interesting to see this patent kind of like makes the mind reel at what is possible.
Yes. And what may come down in the future.
Splatoon 3 will be hosting a new 2023 Splatoween event running October 27th starting at 5 p.m. Pacific time. To October 29th at 5 p.m. Splatoween themed decorations in Splatsville and Inkopolis if you have the DLC. New costumes for Deep Cut and Callie and Marie, also if you have the DLC.
What are they going as?
Oh, I don't think we know yet.
Hmm.
New gear.
Oh, they're probably going as the the themes for the Splat.
Oh, yes.
For this,
speaking of the new Splatfest. So the question is, which would make the best friend? And your choices are zombies, skeletons, or ghosts. And voting will begin October 20th.
Okay, let's quickly go through and see if we can name one friend who is a zombie, one friend who is a skeleton,
okay,
and one friend who is a ghost.
Okay.
So, friend who is a zombie, that's got to be from Shaun of the Dead. What's his friend's name?
Oh, right. Nick is the real,
Nick,
is the actor's
right,
name,
right?
Right.
Right. So at the end of that movie, he's a zombie and he's just like living in the backyard. They play video games together.
Yep.
So that's
yep.
One friend zombie. Friend skeleton, I think, is harder.
What about from Coco?
Sure. Yeah.
Like,
okay.
There's lots of them.
There's lots of them. Yeah. They're all, I mean, they're family more than anything. And then friend ghost.
Casper.
Patrick Swayze.
finally, one new, we, well, actually, sorry. hopefully that's helpful for you, listener, in choosing which would make the best friend.
Right. So
just
you're real.
Picture those.
That's right. You're really doing Shaun of the Dead versus Coco versus Ghost or Casper.
Yep. Take your pick.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, one new Wii U was sold in the U.S. in September, according to the tracking done by Circana, formerly NPD Group, and reported by Matt Piscatella on X. Quote, one new Wii U was sold in the U.S. in September. First time a new Wii U sold since May 2022.
Who had this thing?
We don't know.
Who had this new
yeah,
this new Wii U sitting around in box?
And somebody came in and was like, I'll take that.
I'll take that.
And also, Matt continues, last time a new Vita unit sold was in November 2021 when three were purchased.
Why? I mean, it must have just been someone walking into a store and being like, oh my God, you have these, and just bought them right then and there. Yeah.
Yep.
How many do you have? I'll buy them all.
Yeah. Oh, man. I hope this happens to me, but with a Nintendo 3DS, a new Nintendo 3DS.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. XL or regular size?
I'd take either.
All right. I think I miss my XL. I miss my new 3DS XL. I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah, that stinks. I don't own a new one, but they're all good systems.
Yeah.
Sometimes
that's true.
I'll just like look on Amazon to see what like a new,
and they're all like $800.
Yeah, it's incredible.
All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. That is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, you should join our Discord. All you gotta do is email us and I will send you a link. And then you can get in there and talk about all this fun stuff with us. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers saying thank you for listening.